Rebuilding America. The Rick Smith Show.
The walls come tumbling down. The walls come crumbling, crumbling. The walls come tumbling, crumbling down.
Yes, the walls, the bridges, the roads, the infrastructure of the country. Look, if you neglect something for 30 years, you don't invest in it, you don't upkeep it, what do you think is going to happen? And this is Infrastructure Week, where we pay attention to those crumbling roads, bridges, and all of that. You know, something we've been talking about for years on the program. And just at the beginning of this year, the American Society of Civil Engineers came out with their report. The 2017 Infrastructure Report Card said that we need about $4.6 trillion with a T dollars by 2025 just to bring our infrastructure up to good repair. And you go, you know, for years I've been screaming about this, and the longer it takes us, the more expensive, obviously, it's going to get. And the reality is it affects each and every one of us. In 2016, the ASCE, the American Society of Civil Engineers, put out their Failure to Act report that claimed that we lose about $3,400 per family each year because of our failing infrastructure. And they also point out that by 2025, because of not acting, we're going to not have about 2.5 million jobs because of it. And if we do nothing even then, by 2040, that number could grow to almost 6 million jobs that are not going to happen. Also, for each and every one of us, we're sitting in traffic about 42 hours a year. We could have taken a vacation in that time. Lots of stuff to get to, lots to do. The question is, will this administration have the will to do it, and will the Republicans in the House allow it? And here to talk a little bit about why this is a family issue, why we need to be focused on Infrastructure Week, I've asked Sabrina Owens-Wilson. She's the campaign director for Partnership for Working Families. Sabrina, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you for having me.
So we've got this situation that is not new. We've been talking about it for decades now. But I think we're at a point where hopefully the average family is realizing that lower wages, less opportunities, and more time sitting in traffic affects them directly.
Right. You know, the infrastructure needs in our communities are great. And, you know, we deal with them every day, just as you mentioned. You know, folks are parents that are dealing with problems with their schools and the failing school buildings. We're all sitting in traffic. We worry about our air quality. And, you know, people know that a lot of investment needs to be put into our infrastructure in order to prepare for the future. And people also know what benefits, you know, we need to get out of our infrastructure. They know that, you know, in addition to just, you know, the transportation system, or, you know, the bridge, that's going to create jobs. And folks know that their communities need jobs. They know that we're struggling with air quality and a host of other environmental problems. And it's really, you know, it's a challenge that we all experience every single day.
Right. You know, the thing is most people, when you think of infrastructure, you think of the hard things like roads and bridges and,
right,
and you know, that kind of stuff. But it encompasses so much more. I mean, we're living in the information age, the internet superhighway.
Yep.
And, you know, you look at our broadband access in this country, it's laughable at best and criminal,
right,
at worst.
Yeah, you know, I think it's really about the things we need to live our daily lives, to get to work, to take our kids to school, to access the services that we need. And I think that, you know, the way that the conversation is generally shaped, you know, in D.C. and by politicians and is to make it super technical, to really exclude folks from the conversation. But, you know, it's really about the systems and structures that we all need. And it's really important to remember that this is actually a justice issue. And, you know, our infrastructure systems have, you know, played a big role in perpetuating environmental and economic and racial injustice over the years. And it's important that workers and communities are, you know, a part of the conversation to make sure that these investments flow into communities the way that we need them to.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was just having a conversation with someone the other day who was, you know, we were talking about, you know, the need to really massively invest. And, you know, I was explaining that the Trump plan is kind of like payday lending for infrastructure. We're going to hand it over to Wall Street and the privateers, and they're going to make as much money doing the real high density kind of investments that they can make profit off of. But rural areas and urban communities, we're going to really be left behind.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, Trump talked a lot about rebuilding our cities and towns, but, you know, the most movement we've seen really has been around the border wall. And, you know, the very thin outline that we've seen so far, it really is, like you said, it's a giveaway to Wall Street. And, you know, I think that, you know, there's a few problems with that. One, you know, it's likely when you set up private investors to deal with our infrastructure projects, there's no guarantee that this is actually going to go into and create new projects. It's likely that those tax breaks are going to go to projects they were already planning to do. And we really miss the opportunity, the public misses the opportunity to shape those projects. We're not going to get the scale that we need. We're not going to get the job creation that we need, especially when you move those jobs from the public sector into the private sector. And, you know, investors are going to want to invest in projects that they're going to get a return on. And generally, those come with a fee. And so those are toll roads and airports. You know, that doesn't address, you know, the water systems all over the country that are struggling with lead or you know, broadband, like you mentioned, and rural areas that aren't going to, you know, be suitable for fee-based structure. And, you know, there are tons of studies that have shown that, you know, that type of investment doesn't get the return and deliver the benefits that communities actually need.
Yeah, but so why do you think we still buy that? I mean, there's a lot of these myths out there, like tax cuts create jobs, the private sector can do it better, these kind of myths that we're constantly inundated. Why do we still buy it? Because, you know, I challenge people, hey, show me something that the private sector did that the public used to do for itself that actually benefited we, the people, without a massive handout to the 1%. And I can't find anybody to say, oh, yeah, we built this parking structure, we built this road or whatever. It's just not there.
Right. Yeah, you know, I don't think that people actually do buy that story. You know, I think people believe that, you know, an infrastructure is something for government and the public sector to handle. You saw just this past November, you know, 75% of the transit ballot initiatives across the country passed. People want to pay for that. And, you know, folks are also very familiar with, you know, the stories of what happens when you hand over public goods to the private sector. You know, I think that there's this idea that they're more efficient and they're going to be able to, you know, deliver services or a project in a way that government can't. But, you know, you've got, you know, the parking meter system in Chicago, which people saw, gosh, I think the parking rates went up something like 100% over a few years. Water systems in urban and rural areas where people have seen their water rates go up like and become unaffordable when it's privatized. And so it's just that, you know, public or private profit is in direct conflict with, you know, public interest. It's not the goal when you hand over infrastructure to the private sector.
So Wall Street, there isn't a benevolent side to Wall Street to want to deliver the goods that we need, the commons that we need. So you're saying there's no benevolency on Wall Street? Is that what I'm hearing?
I'm afraid not. I'm afraid not. Well, and you know, we can't look for shortcuts. The need is too great. And we have seen when community is left out of the conversation to get transit systems that skip low-income communities of color. You get the water system in Flint. You know, we can't afford it, both with the economic challenges that we're facing and the need for good jobs, and honestly, the environmental challenges that we're dealing with as well.
Yeah, and here's the thing. I mean, we hear a lot about Flint, and look, that's it's a horrible tragedy. I agree with, but our water infrastructure across this country is failing. I mean, Flint is kind of the flashpoint that I think brought our attention to. But I look at where I live near Harrisburg. The water infrastructure there is 100 or 120 years old. Constant sinkholes. Allentown has tons of lead in its water. I think every community that's been around for 70, 80, 100 years that has this old, decrepit infrastructure that we have upgraded, I think they're all in kind of the same boat. And this is why we need the next New Deal, the next CCC, WPA kind of programs to get people back to work and rebuild the infrastructure that those programs built 70, 80, 100 years ago.
Right. Yeah. You know, Pittsburgh is a great example of that too. They, you know, there's lead in their system, their water system, and you know, the EPA is requiring that they fix the system. In addition to the consent decree on their sewer system as well. And, you know, a labor community coalition there led by Pittsburgh United has, you know, done a ton of community engagement, talked to folks about, you know, how the city needs to deal with fixing the water system there, and have come up with a plan that, you know, is going to green the sewer system in addition to creating a lot of good union jobs. And, you know, the benefit of their proposal as well is that, you know, it's not only about the jobs that will be created you know, fixing the system. It's also the maintenance and the upkeep that's going to create a ton more jobs than you know, an alternative. So there's, you know, there's work in places like LA. There's tons of water systems that need these kind of solutions.
So what do we do, Sabrina? I mean, the reality is the need is so great. It's been, like we've said, it's been so many years since we've invested in this stuff. What does the average person do? I mean, you know, it's been, you know, I remember President Obama saying, look, we're gonna invest, we're shovel ready, all of that stuff. We're going to do these things. And Republicans drew the line in the sand and blocked, gridlocked, obstructed, all of that. And here we are, you know, 8 years later, still talking about we need roads, bridges, water, infrastructure. We need this stuff done.
Right. Yeah, you know, we need folks to, you know, our network is really working on talking to folks. And, you know, we need united voices calling for public funding for infrastructure that's locally controlled. And, you know, when it's locally controlled, we have the best shot at making sure these projects are directed where they need to be and investment is going into the low-income communities, the communities of color, that we're maximizing our opportunity for job creation, and that, you know, community is actually at the table and able to help shape these projects. And so, you know, I think we all need to, you know, be engaged and, you know, a lot of community organizing and coalition building to really have united voices around, you know, demanding the public funding to make sure that this doesn't go become a corporate giveaway to Wall Street, and that, you know,
yeah, I mean, we make sure that our tax dollars actually go into providing the things that we need. And I think the important part that you just laid out there is if it's public infrastructure, if it's public money, it should be ours. We don't need to be giving public money to the privateers to build our infrastructure and have them own it. It seems commonsensical to me.
It is. Private interest is in direct conflict with public goods. So.
Yeah. Again, I just can't believe we're even having that conversation. But it is Infrastructure Week, and the hope is that people will get involved. You know, one thing, if you had people heard this interview, what is one thing you want them to take away?
Just that, you know, this we all are part of the conversation. Don't fall for the idea that this is too technical or that somebody else is going to protect your interests. We all have to be a part of the conversation and holding our elected officials at all levels accountable for how they are investing public money, and it should go back into the people and not to Wall Street.
There you go. Sabrina, I appreciate you taking some time for us. Thanks so much.
Of course. Have a good day.
Great talking with you, Sabrina Owens-Wilson, Campaign Director for the Partnership for Working Families. You want to check out their website, forworkingfamilies.org is the website. We'll get a link at thericksmithshow.com. Check that out. But again, you know, you go back to this. If you need one thing to say, you know, why we need infrastructure in 2014, according to the American Society for Civil Engineers, as a nation, we spent over almost 7 billion hours sitting in traffic, or 42 hours for each and every one of us. We could have gone on vacation, could have had a whole week off of work. But yet we stood sucking the fumes of the car in front of us. Again, another reason why we need public transportation as well. Going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Thought back to America. Rick Smith.